Good day, and welcome to the AnaCap Financial Europe conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Chris Ross-Roberts. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chantelle. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the AnaCap Financial Europe SA DCAF RAIF quarterly investor presentation for the period ending the 30th of September 2019. As set out on page two of the presentation, Justin, Ed and I will take you through the presentation and then we'll open the line to the Q&A session at the end. In addition to the Q&A session, please remember you can send any questions through to info@anacapfe.com or through the website at www.anacapfe.com, where we'll endeavour to reply to them as soon as we can. Details can be found at the end of the presentation. Before we begin, can I please draw your attention to the disclaimer on page one of the presentation, which highlights that the presentation is produced solely for informational purposes and cautions against any forward-looking statements, and that by attending this call and reviewing the presentation, you're agreeing to the limitations set out on page one of the presentation. If I can now hand over to Justin for introductory remarks.
Thanks, Chris, and good afternoon, everyone. We have a fairly brief update today. We've spoken to many of you at recent conferences, from which presentations remain available on our website. However, turning to recent results, overall this quarter, the business has continued to focus on highly selective deployment, continuing to drive growth and profitability whilst managing leverage. So far, year to date, AIF has delivered 81 million euros of gross collections and 55 million euros of adjusted EBITDA, that's as of the 30th September, each up 4% year on year. The total operating cost ratio is only 29.2%, and net debt leverage is down to 3.7 times adjusted EBITDA from just over 4 times 1 year ago. The business has achieved this due to strong embedded growth in collections, which are expected to be 22% higher still in 2020 from the existing portfolio only. The portfolio remains predominantly secured with total market value of collateral greater than 700 million euros, underpinning 555 million of 84-month ERC. And it's broadly diversified across core geographies, including 40% in Italy, 25% in Spain, and 23% in Portugal. The business remains highly selective in deployment, with 25 million euros deployed as of the end of Q3, with a strong pipeline to year-end focused on these core geographies. This is focused only on opportunities where we believe we can achieve optimal returns. With 75% of capital deployed to date in proprietary and or direct follow-on transactions with repeat sellers. Finally, it is low fixed costs that enables AIF to maintain pricing discipline as the market begins to turn more favorable. Maintaining high profitability from continued growth in embedded collections and lower than forecast costs. This is even as we continue to develop asset management capabilities within AIF, particularly in core geographies of Italy, Portugal, and Spain. Now I'd like to turn it back over to Chris to take you through the key financial highlights.
Thank you, Justin. Turning to page seven, AnaCap Financial Europe's financial highlights. Continued growth in core financial metrics. Before I start, just as a quick reminder, Q3 is traditionally a slower quarter for collections activity than the rest of the year, with Q4 historically accounting for around 40% of total collections. However, overall, it's pleasing to note that AIF continued to see growth in its core financial metrics, as set out on page 7. As you heard from Justin, gross collections are up 4.3% on prior year, at 81 million for the period, and revenue is up 8.1% to just shy of 60 million euros. We've reduced deployment targets this current year to between 60 to 75 million as we continue to focus on leverage and disciplined deployment as we start to see the market conditions improve. As previously guided, you'll have noticed an uptick in the operating cost ratio in the period from 28.1% 29.2%. The uplift in operating costs is however lower than we anticipated, as we have seen more accelerated collections through amicable collections, non-full term legal channels, than anticipated at the time of underwriting. Although I know I've said this before, I think it's worth noting again that the total operating cost ratio we refer to is the total operating cost, excluding non-recurring items, rather than a cost-to-collect ratio, and therefore includes all overheads of the business. Our overhead structure is predominantly variable and relative to the value of portfolios held in the business. Our relatively low overheads, driven by the use of our digital platform Minerva and its variable nature, results in an overall higher margin. In summary, AFB's total operating costs remain market leading. Adjusted EBITDA for the period to the 30th of September, the last 12 months adjusted EBITDA has increased by 3.6% and 9.9% respectively to 55.3 million and 98.9 million, demonstrating strong momentum in financial performance. As anticipated, leverage increased marginally in the quarter from June 30th to 3.7 times, but is down from 4.04 times to 3.7 year on year. We can turn to page 8, financial summary, high margin operating platform. As you've heard from Justin, our discipline around deployment, together with a market-leading, predominantly variable cost base, has enabled us to continue to drive momentum in the business and deliver a strong set of results. With a profit after tax margin of 28.2%, operating profit is up 15.7% to 35.3 million, a cash margin on gross collections of 52%. Our master servicing model and the predominantly secured nature of our book with larger average balance size allows the company to operate very efficiently with a lower than average market total operating costs, our total cost to collect being under 20%. Our total operating costs at 29.2% of gross collections or cash revenue, excluding non-recurring costs, are significantly below peers, as noted in the Standard & Poor's rating report of the 6th of September, for which AFE, which noted that in chart 3 of that report, that ANACAP's operating efficiency is consistently ahead of peers. Turning to page 9, gross attributable collections, year-to-date actuals and 84-month forecast by year, 2018 deployment embeds growth in cash generation out to 2021. The graph on page 9 splits out ERC by year and includes actual collections of circa 80 million in September 2019. You'll note from the profile that given 2018 and more recent purchases and the expected timing of collections, that the business has embedded growth in cash flow from its current book out to 2021. This is a key lead indicator for adjusted EBITDA growth without any further deployment of capital. Given our predominantly variable cost structure and the fact that third-party costs tend to be incurred in advance of collections, this graph should be a useful guide to estimating the pattern of adjusted EBITDA from currently owned assets. The last quarter of the year has historically delivered stronger collections. This year, we expect 40% of collections from existing assets in Q4. This compares to 42% in 2018 and 38% in 2019. The last quarter, as in previous years, also includes the conclusion of some larger positions, where there is always some risk to the precise timing of that realization. Turning to page 10, positive key debt metrics and proactive optimization of capital structure. The last 12 months adjusted EBITDA at 98.9 million is up 10% on the prior year. Leverage at the 30th of September at 3.7 is ahead of the market guidance and of our own expectations. Both the LTV ratio and the super senior revolving credit facility ratio are well within covenant levels at 65.9% and 7.4% respectively. As previously discussed at the start of the year, we had expected leverage to increase towards the end of 2019 to above 4.75 times before rapidly declining in 2020, driven by our existing asset base and timing of collections and costs. However, we have now trimmed our deployment for 2019 to 60 to 75 million, previously 125, and therefore expect a moderate increase in net debt to circa 4 times by the end of the year, as we anticipate deploying capital in Q4 in advance of collections. We've set a leverage target of 3 to 3.5 for the end of 2020, and as you'll see from our forecast collections of existing assets on page 9, we anticipate a circa 20% increase in collections prior to any further deployment in Q4. Turning to page 19, sorry, page 11, our proven ability to delever, leverage at 3.7 times, is lower than market guidance. You'll note from the graph on the top of the page that since March 2017, group leverage fell from 4.6 times to 2.68 times at March 2018. During that period, we deployed a relatively modest amount of capital, 25.4 times. Following the deployment of 131 during Q2 and Q3, leverage increased to 4.04 times as at September 18. This is, of course, a static snapshot at a point in time and reflects the fact that debt has been incurred at the quarter's end, and given the collections profile of the secured books purchased, collections will follow in future years, and therefore adjusted EBITDA will lag deployment by some time, as reflected in our ERC profile set out on page 9. We are confident that leverage will decline significantly in 2020 after increasing moderately following anticipated deployment in Q4 this year. We are confident, as the required increase in collections to deliver the lower net debt to adjusted EBITDA ratio is already embedded within existing assets. I'll now hand over to Ed for an update on the asset management platform.
Thank you, Chris. Moving on to slide 13. The improvements in profitability and continued low-cost operating model that Chris and Justin referenced are underpinned by ongoing development in our asset management platform, combining local presence with centralized intelligence. In Spain, we are continuing the program of selective internalization of parts of our portfolio to benchmark performance against our external servicing panel. After positive early results, we expect to continue to extend this program over the coming months. In Italy, Phoenix Asset Management has completed the next phase of its systems upgrade program, enabling granular tracking of secured assets against individual resolution timetables and workflows. And moving on to Portugal, we've now launched a Lisbon office in place to support both our local master servicing activities as well as our STC, with reporting and analytics resources expected to join in the coming weeks. And finally, the ANICAP Minerva digital platform. The data science team has recently been expanded with new hires in London and India as we continue to expand our modelling suite. So in summary, material developments in the build-out of capabilities within our asset management platform to capitalise on the opportunities presented by our book. I'll now hand back over to Justin for concluding remarks.
Thanks, Ed. So in summary, AIFE continues to deliver strong financial performance with growth in collections driving a 10% increase in last 12 months adjusted EBITDA, maintaining an industry-leading total operating cost ratio of only 29.2% whilst continuing to develop internal asset management capabilities in our core geographies of Italy, Portugal, and Spain. Together, this is driving a growth in profitability, even in periods of lower capital deployment. It is low fixed costs that enable AIFE to maintain pricing discipline as the market begins to turn more favorable. Embedded collections from the existing portfolio are expected to again grow significantly in 2020, where we will look to deploy further capital should returns on offer continue to improve. Finally, the business has consistently demonstrated the ability to delever with net debt to last 12 months adjusted EBITDA of 3.7 times versus 4.04 one year ago. I think at this point, we'll turn it over to any questions.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 to ask a question, and if you'd like to remove yourself from the queue, please press star 2. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We will now take our first question from Rory McLaughlin with GSO. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the presentation. Just two quick questions. What were the gross money multiples seen on recent transactions? And also, just focusing on Q3 alone, what, was there any over or under collection within that quarter that would filter into Q4?
Yeah, let me answer the first question. Yeah, so if you look at our Q3, it was slightly under where we thought it would be, where a few positions have slipped from Q3 to Q4. Because we did about 19 million off the top of my head in collections, probably against a target of just over 22. So, you know, some movement from Q3 to Q4. But we sort of, you know, Q3 traditionally is always a pretty quiet quarter for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and by the way, in Q3, just to clarify that point, I mean, a significant reason for that is August falling within Q3, which is often a slow month itself. I think in terms of gross money multiples, you know, we're still, you know, almost entirely focused on secured debt opportunities. I mean, we're still looking at a wider range, but where we continue to see the best risk-adjusted returns and consistent with where we've deployed capital and the experience we have. And in that context, our gross money multiples are ranging around 1.6 plus times. I think in some of the more mature markets, we've had some more accelerated forecasts that could fall slightly below that. And indeed, some, particularly in some newer geographies where we've recently deployed capital, we've tended to target incrementally higher money multiples. But it's around 1.6 times in aggregate.
Yeah, they're set out in the financial statements on page 4 if you want to see more detail.
Great, thanks.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. We will now take our next question from Nikita Fedyuk with SoundPoint. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the presentation. I have two questions. I understand on Q3, if I look at just Q4, of what was expected versus what's achieved so far, given we're now in November. Do you see that you're in line with your performance?
I mean, Q4 is always a big quarter, and November and December are big months. It is something that we look at and track very carefully. At the moment, we have sight of hitting those targets. If you know, one or two positions slip into January, they may slip into January. But certainly, you know, the things that we are trying to close out over the next sort of month, effectively, are currently tracking. But there's always a risk when it might be dependent on a refinancing or a third party to get the money available, that these things can slip over a very short period of time.
I see. Well, this one or two positions, are they kind of significant enough in terms of the size?
No, they're not mature in the context of our overall ERC, but there could be positions there, or, you know, in the £2 to £3 million range. And if you've got two or three of them, it can in itself be material to a particular quarter, but not in the overall context of our ERC.
But just to be clear about this, this isn't a black box. I mean, these are where we have high, you know, specific targets. We have, you know, high degree of transparency in terms of what we're trying to achieve, and to the extent that we miss targets, certainly when we come through to reporting for the full year results, we should have good visibility to how much they were delayed, if they should be delayed, and we certainly should have continued visibility to that cash flow.
I see. Thank you. In terms of the planned purchases, how much are you planning to spend in Q4?
Well, we're planning a total for the year of between 60 and 75. And we spent, at the end of September, we'd spent 25, and that's increased to about 34 as of today's date.
And I would add that we have more than that in our pipeline currently that's fairly well advanced. I think the reality is we are, as we discussed earlier in the year, we've dialed down our budget for the year, conscious of trying to maintain, obviously, continued management of leverage and trying to be highly selective. So I think we're carefully picking our spots, and we're really only winning deals right now where we believe we're getting, you know, significantly improved returns. And where we've seen that coming from, where our conversion rate's been much higher, has been in not only core geographies, but specifically in deals that are direct follow-ons from prior transactions, i.e. from the same seller, and or we have proprietary situations. So we have a significant amount of deal flow that's off-market being negotiated bilaterally with sellers where we believe we have competitive advantages to achieve optimal returns.
Okay, thank you. That's good news. And then last question on page 5 with regards to this $700 million of collateral value. Is this all if the real estate property kind of gets this high valuation, is this all money that's going to come to you, or this is still on top of your ERC, and what's on top of it will be distributed to the kind of owners of the property?
Hi, it's Ed here. The differential between those two figures is the headroom that we build into our ERC forecasts. So by reflecting the market value in terms of a prudent liquidation value in our ERC forecasts. So the answer to your question is yes, that is our market value, albeit clearly in our ERC, we've taken a prudent haircut to that market value view.
Yeah, and there may be occasions, Nikita, where we're debt capped. So if, for example, there's something that was hugely successful in the sale, we never get more than our actual outstanding credit balance, and any surplus might be returned to the original owner.
That's it. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Niall Considine. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. First question is just around the collection shortfall in decline year over year in Q3. Is all of that sort of, I think, $2.5 million odd below last year, is all of that just the slippage you talked about, or is there some sort of phasing of purchases that's influencing that as well?
No. Look, you know, last year we did 22.4, and this year I think we did 19.9. There is a slight drop. There was some slippage that from Q3 this year into Q4, but it's partly dependent on the profile of the assets that we own at the time. So clearly, you know, the collections that we achieved in Q3 18 would have been off probably a much older vintage, where the current collections are of a more recent vintage. So we're beginning to see collections come in from what we purchased in 2018.
Which is still ramping up.
Which is still in the process of ramping up over time.
Okay, understood. And then
so you can sort of see,
second...
if you look at the graph, if you look at page 9 and see that pattern of the graph, that sort of bell-shaped curve, we're in that sort of relatively steep bit of that bell-shaped curve at the moment.
Understood. Okay, thank you. And then second question, are you able to give the value of collateral and the breakdown of secured versus unsecured of your ERC? I think you didn't include the chart you normally, or the slide
I haven't got that in front of me, but it's something that we will publish at the half year and full year.
Okay, I guess let me put it a different way. Was it materially different?
No, it won't be materially different.
No, and the collateral value, just to be clear, is that 700 figure that we mentioned a minute ago.
But it hasn't materially changed from what we presented at the half.
Okay.
If you look at that analysis there.
Okay, understood. And then last question on the deployment of capital in Q4, that sort of, you know, 40 to 50 million. Can you just give us a sense for what regions you're focusing? Is that spread across kind of your three main, you know, regions, or is there a weighting one way or the other?
Yes, I think it'll be more like 30 to 40 million, and we, in line with revising the forecast down marginally, it is almost entirely in those three core geographies of Spain, Portugal, and Italy. We have continued to focus on other geographies, including in particular Poland, where you may recall we had recently deployed capital. However, between now and year end, in terms of what we complete, we think it's most likely to be in each of those three geographies only. And that's a concerted focus. I mean, we're always looking at new things, but it happens to be the markets where we feel most developed and where we believe we can find the most differentiated pipeline. Hence, we're seeing a lot of deals that are off market because obviously we're quite well developed in those countries and we're often dealing with sellers we've bought from before.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star one. It appears that there are no questions on the phone line. I'd like to turn it back to the speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody, and have a good run up into the end of the year. Thank you.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.